This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
So suddenly, here was this impenetrable wall that was slammed down saying that path is done.
And I bluffed my way through it. I kept my sense of humor all the way through.
But about that time, the sound started again, and I decided I was going to find where it was coming from.
Well, it's true. Every time you walk in the door, you don't know what you're going to face.
And I'm at the point in my life where I'm thinking about, well, what can I do? What kind of journeys can I do and can I not do as I grow older?
And next thing I know, we are all going to jail.
Dear Diary, this would never happen in Wisconsin.
Actually, a great deal happens in Wisconsin. We had a baby in Wisconsin, and that was hard to imagine. Hello. Welcome to Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller from our studio in Sebastopol, California. And this is a show about journeys, travels, trips, pilgrimages, whether it's on the road or in our head. How do you jump across those mud puddles or splash right in?
So we've been going back through the snapshots, some of our favorite pieces over this first season, while we're getting ready for next year's expeditions. And next month, we're changing our format and our schedule. More about that at the end of the show. So, this week...
As promised, two stories about love.
Love, which is a pretty slippery theme for a show. You can do almost anything and call it that, sort of like national security.
And we'll ramble on about that a little more. But before we forget, we want to put in a pitch for stories. In November, we'll be doing a special about a kind of journey that was pivotal in many people's lives. We'd like to talk with war veterans. If you served in the military during a war, whatever you did, whatever your politics are, if that was a vivid experience in your life, we'd like to hear from you. Email us at info@independenteye.org if you have a story you're willing to share.
So, love. This is a piece we did some months ago, and hearing it a few times since then, that's what it's about. In our opening collage, somebody said, every time you walk in the door, you don't know what you're going to face. The person who said that, in fact, was an ER physician. But I think it applies to love, or coming into any human presence, discovering.
This is Cherry Blossoms.
This is a true story.
Well...
The inside of it is true.
You believe that?
What I want to talk about...
So ignore me.
...is my affair with Jean Seberg.
Jean Seberg.
The actress.
Jean Seberg.
In the 50s, last century, okay? They had this big national talent search for an unknown girl to play St. Joan in the movie. And she was just out of high school in Iowa, Marshalltown, Iowa... And she won, and she starred in the movie, and she was really terrible, so she totally crashed and burned.
Not everybody has what it takes.
But then she went to France, and she was in this movie, Breathless, and she was a big hit, and she became kind of a star in France.
Kind of a pattern.
And then she died when she was 40.
That happens. So you were involved with Jean Seberg.
Yeah, I might be embroidering this a little bit. Yeah, and... You know, I think I could have made some difference there for her. I think I was really in love.
With Jean Seberg.
You could say that.
You never met her.
Okay, not in the sense of us meeting each other,
you
but...
You never met her.
I saw her.
But that fact makes it less interesting.
So, I was a freshman in high school, Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Near Marshalltown?
No, clear across the state. And my family, there wasn't any culture, so to speak. Books, music, nothing. I'd never seen a play. But then they did plays at the high school, and they were having auditions. I went along with a friend to auditions, and I auditioned just for the hell of it, and...
And guess what?
I didn't get cast.
Not everybody has what it takes.
Well, considering that I went on to study theater, got a PhD, taught theater, then started company, and have been working in theater professionally, for 32 years, they might have seen some emerging talent there for their drippy little play.
Nevertheless...
So I tried out again and didn't get cast again.
Kind of a pattern.
I asked about it, and Mrs. Chimeras suggested that I should pulled the script up higher so I could mumble more clearly.
How was she in bed?
Mrs. Chimeras. Jean Seberg. Wonderful, I would imagine. I'm sorry, this isn't easy. It's hard to tell a story when there's a heckler inside you. So I tried out again, and I got cast. I was the gardener, Mario the gardener. It was a one-act play, and it was about this duke who killed his duchess, and he was going to marry another young woman and probably kill her, but Mario the gardener was really in love with the dead duchess.
That happens.
So anyway, this was special, because it was the state contest play. It was in spring, and we got to go to the state drama contest in Iowa City, clear across the state, on the train. This was a very big deal. I'd been away from home before, like to church camp or Boy Scouts, but this was 200 miles, and with juniors and seniors and girls, and we were going to stay in a hotel.
How was she in bed?
Well, this theater thing was great. I mean, basically, theater was they told you what your character was and where to stand, and you underlined your lines, and you learned them, and you practiced how to say them, and hoped you wouldn't forget them, and that was a good excuse to meet girls, which my body was telling me was a very important assignment.
Come on, how was she?
So we rehearsed, and we all went on the train with Mrs. Chimeras, and I sat directly across from Cynthia somebody, who was supposed to be the kind of the whore of Babylon. And what she said, could I have a bite of your apple? And I said, anything.
No, you didn't.
It was amazing.
You're exaggerating there.
So we got there, and we stayed in the hotel. And next morning, we had our tech rehearsal on the big stage, and I practiced my lines.
You remember your lines?
Yeah, I remember I'm bringing in cherry blossoms to put in front of the Duchess's portrait. And the maid says, Mario, you know the Duke hates cherry blossoms? And I say, but she loved cherry blossoms.
That's corny.
I didn't know diddly about what I was saying. This was just my lines.
But she loved.
So then we did the play. And I was really scared, but I said all my lines. And we didn't win the state contest, obviously, but then...
Not everybody has what it takes.
Then we get to see some of the other plays, the other high schools. And so there's a couple of ditzy little plays that are kind of stupid. And then this... It's Marshalltown High School. And they're doing the third act of Our Town by Thornton Wilder. I'd never heard of this, but it sounded kind of strange. And the curtain goes up. And my whole life changes. I mean, come on, I didn't know anything about art. I get good grades. I'm going to be a scientist or an engineer. But on the stage, there's just a row of chairs. People sitting in the chairs. It's a graveyard. And then there's people with umbrellas. They're coming for a funeral, and it's raining. It isn't like a play. It's like a dream.
Yeah, it can be very moving, even if it's corny.
And this blonde girl comes out from the mourners. And she's dead. She's the one who died.
Jean Seberg.
Yeah, this is Jean Seberg, and she's a senior at Marshalltown High School. And she's the star of the high school drama group, and she has her whole life before her. But this afternoon, she's dead.
That happens.
She asks to go back to see her home one more time. She sees her mom and dad and going through the day and all the love that's there and never spoken. And she says, like, oh, God, I never knew. I didn't know how beautiful it is. And does anybody ever really live life every minute? I can't stand it.
Take me back.
Take me back.
Up the hill.
Up the hill.
Jean Seberg.
To my grave.
Heavy.
Oh, God, I never knew. I never knew plays were about life. I never knew other people felt like that, that there were human beings who were calling out to the others in the tribe. I never knew that girls were real, that they felt things that I felt. I never knew I felt things.
Oh, quite often.
Then we went and we wandered around Iowa City, went to the bookstore. I'd never been to a bookstore. I bought Great Poems of the English Language. I never read poems before, except in English class. I had absolutely no idea what had happened to me. I don't remember the train trip home, except that I tried to read the poems. There was a poem by Dylan Thomas.
Now as I was young and easy under the apple boughs about the lilting house.
I guess that was the time when I felt something shift, when I knew my life was going to be different. That's when I knew it.
You believe that?
I'd looked for her name in the program. I wondered how could I meet her, say hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I really liked your performance.
Thanks.
You're a senior?
Yep.
I'm a freshman.
Nice to meet you. So long.
Then about a year or so later, there was all this publicity about St. Joan, and I thought, oh my God, that's her. That's her. And by that time, I knew that I was going to be an actor. And
you were jealous because somebody from Iowa was going to be a big star.
Yes.
And she was never going to look at you because there were all these rich, sexy guys in Hollywood.
Yes. Then I read all this stuff about the movie and how she was really ridiculous, and I thought I ought to feel sympathetic, but what I really felt was, great, maybe she'll come back to Marshalltown and I'll meet her someday.
But she didn't.
And then I read that she went to France. I think I was married by then and teaching, and she was in this movie and married to this director.
You never met her.
Then later there was stuff about her being in radical politics and something about the Black Panthers and the FBI. And I was an actor by then. Had my own company with Elizabeth and a couple of kids.
Kind of a pattern.
And then later, 1978, 80, something, she was dead. I had never seen her movies. I had started writing plays by then.
You got some good reviews.
And there were spans of time, years maybe, when I wouldn't even think about any of that. And then it comes back. Mostly like now, when I'm surrounded by love and working on stuff I love, and then suddenly thinking about the cemetery scene in our town, and God, it doesn't have to be like that. There can be joy and abundance. And then this luminous creature. This luminous creature comes forward out of the funeral, and everything opens.
Gene Seberg.
And I think of that first dumb little play that took me to Iowa City as Mario the Gardener, and yeah, Mario was kind of a freshman in relation to the dead Duchess. Yeah, I come on stage right, walk down left to the portrait of the Duchess carrying the flowers in the downstage hand so the audience sees, and the maid comes in.
Mario, what are you doing here?
I brought her some cherry blossoms.
Mario, you know the Duke hates cherry blossoms.
But she loved cherry blossoms. I still remember the line.
That was Cherry Blossoms. Our thanks to Thornton Wilder for Our Town, to Robert Browning for the poem My Last Duchess, to the memory of Gene Seberg, and some of you may have recognized the style as a direct ripoff.
Call it a tribute.
A tribute to Ken Nordine, a legendary Chicago radio artist.
Thank you, Ken. And, you know, damn, I wish I could remember the name of the teacher who cast me in my first role. I cannot remember it. What a strange accident. I mean, how could she have seen the true genius under my overwhelming lack of talent? But we were talking about love.
Love. Webster's Collegiate Dictionary lists 9 definitions for the noun, including the score of 0 in tennis.
I think we could come up with a few more. It's a pretty wide range from the, you know, the highest spiritual communion with the divine to an intense obsession with somebody's rear end.
Well, just the range of how much is it about you and how much is it about the other person? I've wondered how many love songs would be left if the concept of jealousy vanished from the earth.
That lovely Beatles song, "You better run for your life while you can, little girl, if I catch you with another man." We could kind of live without that one.
So this is a piece we did a very long time ago, part of a show called The Want Ads, trying to find the definition.
Love. Love.
Love conquers all.
Love makes the world go round.
Love is the coldest of critics.
Love is the orbit of the restless soul.
Love is a flame.
Love is a greater law.
Love is blind.
Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with a remover to remove.
Love stings.
Love is a greased pig.
Alas, my love, you do me wrong.
Frankie and Johnny were lovers.
Everybody loves a lover.
All we need is love.
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 'Cause I love it when Mama says goodnight. She really loves me. Papa, Mama, Grandma, Teddy Bear, Cookie Monster loves me. Mr. Rogers loves me. The mailman. They all really
stink. 'Cause they get mad if I don't blow my nose or don't get all A's or if I sock the babysitter. And my brother says you better stop crying 'cause nobody loves a crybaby. And I feel so
wiggly inside. I mean, is that how it feels? I mean, can you really fall in love before you wear a bra? I sit at my desk and try to concentrate, but it's just not easy to remember the capital of Idaho when you feel
like a real stud. I mean, sure, it's my dad's car, but I tell them it's mine, and I start hitting up around 75, 80. They're so scared they gotta hang on to my neck. When I'm up to 90, they're ready.
What do you think about when you hear the word love?
Family. Heart. Feeling. Rain.
I think when I was seven and I crawled up inside a pillowcase, all wadded up, and my family was at the table, and I waddled out like a little duck-walking marshmallow, and they all cracked up, and I felt like I'd done something so neat. They all loved me so much, all I could do was curl up and get hugged.
Anger.
I think...
Cats.
Why can't you go up to someone and say what
Mama.
You need? And it's a law they have to
Sex.
Say, okay. And they don't tell
Air.
Anybody or charge anything.
Rainbows.
And they always have to say, I love
Tears.
You.
Eyes.
Making
Losing.
Love. I think,
Forever.
How do you make love? I thought it was something you
Alarm
fell into. Class. Like you don't watch on the sidewalk and you step in something. But then you have all this love, a lifetime supply,
whispers,
and you run through it like a case of beer.
Mumbles,
you drink it up, and all you can do
rustles,
then is make it. Learn how
squeaks,
to make it. Make it
smells,
one stitch at a time.
Tickles. Spring.
But that's all we need. Sure, there's problems. Money, and if the job's gonna last. But the car's okay now, and he's not drinking, and I can work another couple of months. It's gonna be a lot different when the baby comes. Just a lot more reason to stick with it.
And sure, there's problems. Money, the car, the baby. I mean, it's hard to have the same kind of relationship once there's kids. And she bitches if I have a drink, but we really love each other. We really love each other, and I think if we're really committed to each other, then we can work out whatever
kind of settlement we can agree on. Because we finally realized, okay, it's over. Oh, it's all fun and games before the kids come, but as soon as he has to start acting like a grown-up, then he weasels around and you realize, hey, I'm alone.
I fell in love.
But we were still in college.
I fell in love.
But the children came first.
I fell in love.
Till the first time he hit me.
I fell in love.
But once was enough.
I fell in love.
But he didn't have Social Security.
I fell in love.
But he stinks.
I fell in love.
Supporting three kids.
I fell in love.
But it was a woman.
I fell in love.
But not enough.
I fell in love.
Again.
I'm alone, and I don't really mind being alone. Remember all the hassles? Oh, sometimes you wish somebody would give a damn, but I really find a lot more satisfaction in...
this relationship than the last one. It's a more mature kind of love. We both do the dishes. We belong to ourselves. It's really a partnership, more of a...
business relationship. We have developed this deep financial intimacy that binds us together. The house, insurance, straight life, cash, value life, and you don't expect as much.
You expect a little more. You want somebody to just come up and give you...
the most beautiful Valentine. Not just be my Valentine, but one with a quilted heart and this really reeky perfume, and it costs $5 and comes right out and says, I love you. And you're not embarrassed at all. You're just...
too embarrassed to reach out and touch and look and say, we're here for better or worse.
Better or worse.
Better. Worse.
Hey, see, the Sprague celebrated their golden.
Oh, I should send them a card. They sent us one.
How's your kidneys now?
Stop that.
What?
That noise you're making.
Never could tell what they saw in each other.
Nobody else would have them.
They hate each other and stay together to prove it.
You'd expect a little more.
Pain's gone?
They sent us a card. Now your love is flecked with silver.
Flecked.
I should send them a card.
Send them the same one back. Flecked.
Hey. Did you get me a Valentine?
Oh, you think I want to be your Valentine?
Oh, I got some idea. Night before last.
Hey, did you hear Jesse's kids? You're not my Valentine, you're a booger.
I'm not a booger.
You're a booger.
I'm not a booger.
Booger, booger, booger.
Well, even a booger can be a Valentine.
If he loved me,
he'd make a pot of coffee.
If she loved me,
she'd make the toilet bowl sparkle.
If he loved me,
he wouldn't wear long johns.
If she loved me,
she'd grin and bear it.
If he loved me,
he'd see how rotten I am.
If she loved me,
I wouldn't have gas.
If they loved me,
it wouldn't snow.
If he loved me,
he'd grow up.
If she loved me,
she'd understand.
If they loved me,
I'd love them.
If they loved me,
I couldn't believe it.
If they loved me,
I'd have to begin.
If they loved me,
I'd stand there, tickled pink, and I'd say, hello.
That was Love. Joining us was our longtime colleague, Camilla Shade.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye, with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Hitchhikers Guild. Visit our website, www.independenteye.org.
We mentioned that we're changing time and format. What is happening is this is the last show of our half-hour series, number 66, in fact. And in September, we're moving to a schedule of a one-hour show each month. Same kind of thing, only longer and less frequent.
You can get the new schedule from your local station, or it'll be on our website. Or if you're on our email list, we'll let you know. The reasons are that, first, we really want to experiment with the longer format. Some of our specials we've had to chop up in pieces to broadcast.
And also, we badly need the time to work on distribution of the show and actually getting some money to support it, which is just starting to happen. But producing a very complicated half-hour a week with no money is very tough, and we need to work on that part of the equation.
We want to thank, wow, lots of people. Our stations, KPFA, KRCB, KWMR, KFCF, KZYX and Z, and CJYL in Kootenay, British Columbia.
The actors of the Hitchhiker's Ensemble, who have helped develop some of our dramatic pieces, and actually 79 people this year who've given us interviews.
Our web critters, Steve Willite, Eli Bishop, Steve Powell, and Lou Judson. And our board members, Mark Green, Kim Tripsmith, Anadea Judith, Elaine Holtz, and J.C. Todd.
The 72 card-carrying members of the Hitchhiker's Guild, with donations ranging from $30 to $500, and the many, many people who've purchased our CDs. And us. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Conrad. Our September show, The Migration of Artists. A man moves from the Egyptian agricultural ministry to being a classical composer to being an African drummer. And a poet on a cross-country trip with giant statues of dogs. And an American duo sing on the streets of Baghdad 9 days after the bombing. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And a useful quotation from Anna C. Brackett's The Technique of Rest, 1892. When you are waiting for a train, don't keep perpetually looking to see if it is coming. The time of its arrival is the business of the conductor, not yours. It will not come any sooner for all your nervous glances and your impatient pacing, and you will save strength if you will keep quiet. After we discover that the people who sit still on a long railroad journey reach that journey's end at precisely the same time as those who fuss continually, we have a valuable piece of information.